Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. Aside from our usual bizarre ups and downs, the weather has warmed up now pretty quickly. I'm seeing people lingering at plant displays in local garden centers and griping about the prices, and even outside grocery stores. A couple of my favorite 1 and 2 day plant sales are coming up over Mother's Day. More about those in a moment. But first, we'll be turning the calendar over to May in just a few days, so I want to comment briefly once again regarding the concept that became widely talked about a few years ago, something called No-Mow May. Some people insisted that lawns be allowed to grow freely to provide nectar and pollen for early foraging insects. That's assuming the lawn has the weeds that offer flowers. Turf alone obviously does not, so there's no point whatsoever in heeding that suggestion. I already have pointed out in an earlier segment of In the Green Outdoors that dandelions and other lawn weeds are far inferior to the nectar and pollen offered by a wide variety of native trees that also bloom much earlier. Looking around Marion over the last several weeks, an observant nature lover will have noticed the wide variety of trees, shrubs, and smaller plants in full bloom long before dandelions came into flower. Our native bees evolved with these and are not dependent upon the invasive dandelions and other lawn weeds for their nourishment. Okay, no more to be said about no-mow May. Get out and mow. Now I want to share what I learned during a visit to a local grocery store this past week. The rising temperatures we've enjoyed recently triggered the arrival of potted herb, vegetable, and flowering plants to Marion's grocery stores and garden centers. For those listeners who have not yet looked at these displays, let me warn you in advance that you will experience sticker shock at this spring's plant prices. If, despite the price tags, you just give a resigned sigh and decide to purchase some of these potted herbs or vegetables, please just consider what I observed by comparing the cost of the potted plants outside to the mature vegetables in the produce department in the grocery store. So, you could purchase one cabbage, cauliflower, or broccoli plant for $4.99, each of which would eventually, assuming all goes well, provide you with exactly one cabbage, cauliflower, or broccoli head. Then I went inside to the produce department. There, a head of cabbage sells for $1.99 a pound. Broccoli is only $1.49 a pound, and a large head of cauliflower is $3.49. Now think of the preventive measures necessary against the white butterflies and cabbage moths that lay eggs on these kinds of plants. Consider in advance whether your efforts to keep the plants fertilized, protected, watered, and weeded are worth it. How about herbs? Do you like herbs? A pot of cilantro sells for $5.99 on the outside display. One pot. But in the produce section inside, you could opt for a small pot of living cilantro for only $1.99, marked down this week from $2.99. It's scarcely smaller than the $5.99 pot, but both of these have no more and likely fewer leaves than a bunch of the fresh-cut cilantro inside offered for only 89 cents. Neither pot is going to yield as much herb as the cut bunch. A pot of cilantro, in any case, is a waste, no matter what, since it's not going to live long. They're seeded way too thickly in pots, they cannot be divided into smaller individual plants, and they will bolt quickly. So neither pot is a bargain. For goodness sake, buy yourself a packet of cilantro seed and sow 6 or 8 seeds every 2 or 3 weeks. Plant it in a gallon pot if you haven't got a few inches of open ground somewhere. Basil plants, all of which were in deplorable condition, indoors as well as out, because of the cold weather. They were $5.99 for a single potted plant outside, and $1.99 in the produce department for a tight cluster of 4 or 5 plants that had little hope of surviving even one more day. And there's also the option to buy cut stems of basil wrapped in plastic film and displayed next to the tomatoes. The small pots of basil in the produce section, had one cared to buy them at $2.99 a week earlier while they still were fresh, you could buy the pot, trim back the longest stems, and root those in water to plant later, using the rest of the plant in your recipe. I did that, just that, in fact, in early January. Of course, I do have a light set up in the basement where I grew the plants on, since the windowsill in January is not sufficient. But still, I had fresh basil when I wanted it, for little cost. My point in relaying what I saw is simply to remind listeners of the truth of the old caveat, let the buyer beware. Now, on the other hand, while still pretty crazy expensive to me, single pots of tomato and pepper plants all were priced at $5.99. That's a lot higher than last year, but one must concede that since these plants will, optimally, yield multiple fruits over a period of many weeks, they will pay for themselves. Unlike those coal family plants that will yield but a single head of cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, and so on. For the tomatoes and peppers, I suppose it's not an unreasonable price for those who cannot start their own plants from seed. I am fortunate in that I am able to do so. But please, shop around if you're in the market for vegetable or herb plants. I'm not even going to discuss flowering plants. Takes too much time. You're on your own. The heart wants what the heart wants. Just be an aware shopper. Oh, speaking of those white cabbage butterflies, by the way, I was startled to see one of these over a week ago fluttering around as I was out adding compost to my raised beds. Now, I wasn't worried, since I have not yet planted any vegetables of the cabbage family, which are the usual host plant for this butterfly species. I don't plant them because there are just the two of us, and my husband, with his persnickety palate, will not eat cabbage or cauliflower, and can barely be compelled to eat a little broccoli. He won't eat stir-fry with its variety of vegetables, so growing bok choy and similar greens for only one person is hardly practical. So the butterfly sighting was of no concern to me as far as what's in my garden. Nothing in round yet except potatoes, peas, and some bush beans, lettuce, carrots, radishes, well, you know. I was a bit dubious about planting the beans, but the packet said that this variety, a purple-potted bush type, tolerates cold soil better than most varieties. Under the fluorescent lights in my basement, my tomatoes, peppers, and eggplant are challenging one another for space. I've just gotten them out onto the screened porch yesterday, and the nights are still a bit cool, so I may have to bring them indoors from time to time. But the white butterfly, back to that. I don't know of anyone near me that has such crops growing yet, and none of the farm fields in my vicinity ever plant coal crops. Although a few years ago, one about a mile or so away did plant turnips or some sort of brassica as a cover crop, the fragrance of which, as it decomposed in spring, did not delight the adjacent subdivision. But some wild members of the mustard family, technically the Brassicaceae or Cruciferae family, plants commonly known as the mustards, the crucifers, or the cabbage family plants, are up and some even are blooming now. This Brassicaceae or Cruciferae family, more commonly known as the cabbage family, includes not just the familiar cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, radish, and many other garden vegetable plants, but a vast array of wild and cultivated mustards, including the terrible invasive garlic mustard and the tall, attractive, but similarly invasive Dame's Rocket, whose mix of bright pink, white, and magenta flowers grow along ditches and roadsides in late spring, ceaselessly tossing in the wind of passing cars. Some of these wildlings are up now, some even blooming, such as the edible hairy bittercress that I mentioned in my segment 2 weeks ago as one of the invasive winter annuals, and this too may be a host plant for the white butterfly. The flowers of the brassicas, the mustard family plants, always present their four petals arranged as a cross, hence the old family name Cruciferae. However, not all flowers that have four petals are brassicas. A similar statement may be made regarding mint family plants, in that all mints have square stems and opposite leaves, but not all plants with square stems and opposite leaves are mints. The basal leaves of plants of the mustard family tend to more or less radiate from a central point, just as with the X-shaped petals of brassicas or the square-stemmed plants with opposite leaves of the mint family. This growth habit is far from unique, but still the observation is one more clue to plant family identity. Seeds of this plant family develop and ripen in distinct, often elongated, capsules. The botanical term for these is silique. Now there's a good Scrabble word for you. These siliques, or seed capsules, develop along flowering stems, maturing in succession as the flowers open and are pollinated. When still unripe, these pods and their contents can make excellent, crunchy, peppery eating. In fact, each spring I purposely leave some radishes to bolt, and soon the flowers that appear, which, by the way, are very attractive to tiny native bees and other small pollinators, the flowers are followed by fat, tasty pods that I pluck and nibble while working in the garden, as well as gather a handful to add to my supper salad. As the seeds ripen, they harden, and the pungent flavors of the plant become concentrated in the seed. And this is what mustard is made from. The ripening seeds remain in the siliques until ripe, which brings us once more to the siliques of the hairy bittercress I mentioned a moment ago, and in my last segment 2 weeks ago, in the winter weeds talk. Their pods explode when fully ripe, scattering the seeds for several feet that lie dormant until fall. So back to my musings about this butterfly that is so ubiquitous in warm months. Sadly, despite the variety of pollinator-attracting flowers, fruits, and vegetables that I grow, it was almost the only species I saw with any frequency in our yard all last summer. So off to Google I went for more information about this oh-so-common Lepidopteran, said to be the most widespread butterfly in the United States. A surprising thing I learned is that the cabbage white may migrate over a distance of 100 miles, with flights beginning in early spring and continuing through September. Of course, certainly anyone listening to this broadcast is well aware of the monarch butterfly migration, and perhaps you heard my earlier segment in last fall when I mentioned the migration of Painted Lady and the related Red Admiral butterflies, both here in the U.S. and in Europe. Butterflies and moths that do not migrate spend the winter in various stages of growth. Some, such as the morning cloak butterfly, overwinter as adults, others as eggs, some as caterpillars, still others in chrysalis or pupa before the warming temperatures allow them to complete their metamorphosis. The fact that many Lepidopterans spend the winter in fallen tree leaves is why environmentalists have been urging us to leave the leaves each autumn rather than mowing or otherwise disposing of them. Of course, timing is everything, and evolution has seen to it that the timing of the next step in the process is tied to something called phenology. I've spoken of phenology in previous segments over the years, but if the word is drawing a blank for you, here's the definition at the website of the National Phenology Network, which states, "Phenology is the study of the timing and cyclical patterns of events in the natural world, particularly those related to the annual life cycles of plants, animals, and other living things." Obviously, it would not do for a caterpillar or butterfly to awaken before their host plants have leafed out, or the various nectar-providing plants are in bloom. Now we all have a few more facts to add to our knowledge of butterflies. And finally, plant sales are popping up like dandelions over the next couple of weeks. Two of my favorite Mother's Day plant sales are the huge Chadwick Arboretum Spring Plant Sale and Auction on May 8th through 10th. Check their website for details. On Saturday, May 10th only, Gantz Farm will hold their 32nd annual sale, only between the hours of 8:30 and 2:30, rain or shine. While this sale is much smaller, it's an opportunity to visit their amazing botanical gardens, well worth the drive to the farm. It's located in Gantz Park at 2255 Home Road in Grove City. And of course, my co-host Gail Martin's beautiful Natives in Harmony Nursery is now open for the summer, Fridays through Mondays at 4652 Township Road 179 in Marengo. It's worth a visit just to see her colorful yard full of native plants. This is Carol Kelly saying, let's all enjoy the warming days and productive rainfall, and perhaps some of us will cross paths at one of the plant sales in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.